Pettersson's in. Elias Pettersson scores. Kachuk scores. Matthew Kachuk. What a goal.
You're listening to
another chance. Great save by Markstrom. Here's Kachuk. Oh, what a save by Demko.
Rintoul and Sermon.
What's going on? How's your Tuesday? Either way, wherever you're at, we're going to make it better. 960-960-650-650. It's Rintoul. It's Sermon. I will not be pulling your hair and throwing you to the ice today, just so you know.
Now, if you did do that, that would just be considered a bit of a scrum and a wrestling move and something that happens in hockey. Right, Scott?
That happens on radio, too. Just happens with radio hosts. It's just the type of thing you see every day on a show. It's the type of thing you see every day on a show. The reaction from the hockey world today, as we dive right into it here, and get your text in, 960-960-650-650. And I do think there are going to be people who say, ah, the media, the fans, they're overreacting. Social media is overreacting. I do think there'll be a side of it. But the reaction from the hockey world is going to be very interesting today, because I can say what I want. You can say what you want. What players say matters a lot. I'm interested to have a former player on the show, Mike McKenna. Bruce Boudreau is going to join the show later. He did not coach Tom Wilson in Washington, but he just missed him. He knows a lot about the player. He coached against him for years. He's watched the progression of his career. And yes, I think all of our listeners have by now seen what Tom Wilson did last night in that game against the Rangers.
Yeah, and if you haven't, it's pretty easy to find. Just type Tom Wilson in Twitter or in your Google browser. You can find it. You can find slow-mo videos, Scott, of it. You can find anything and every angle that you want of this hit. So what happened last night, Scott? Let's kind of break it down. Pavel Buzhnevich, kind of, you know, he's going hard to the net, trying to get a puck loose after the goaltender makes a save. Tom Wilson decides, while he's down on the ground, to give him a punch in the back of the head. Okay, that's pretty bad as it is, and that's what he got a fine for today. Apparently, punching someone in the back of the head is good enough for a fine. It's a roughing penalty.
Five grand. That's the type of thing that you get fined $5,000 for if you don't wear your socks high enough in the NFL, but $5,000 in the NHL. Okay.
Best tweet I saw today was the fact that, yes, if you don't wear your socks the right way in the NFL, you get $5,000. But, oh, punching someone in the back of the head with his face smashed up against the ice, oh, that's $5,000. Okay, whatever. That's under the CBA and player safety. Again. And then you watch it a little bit more, and Ryan Strome comes in. He pulls off Buzhnevich, and then he's punching him on the ground. And then Artemi Panamin comes in and tries to get Wilson off of Strome, and he kind of jumps on his back. And you can see how strong Wilson is in this because he just basically stands right up with Panarin on his back. And then comes the melee, and there comes Artemi Panarin thrown to the ground. I've watched this for as many angles as I can, Scott. I have seen every single angle that I have. And you know what? That's not a hockey play. That's not a scrum. That's not two guys just wrestling on the ice. That is a suspendable offense, and the NHL today should be ashamed of themselves.
There's a lot here, and let's hear from David Quinn first, and we'll unpack this in a second. David Quinn is the head coach of the Rangers, obviously has a vested interest in this, and he did not hold back after the game last night.
There are lines that can't be crossed in this game, and it's just, to me, it's just zero respect for the game in general. And, you know, you got one of the star players in this league now who could have got seriously, seriously hurt in that incident. It's just, you saw what happened. And, you know, it happens time and time again with him, and it's just it's totally unnecessary. And it's, it's just, you all saw what happened. And it's just, like I said, it's just zero respect for the game and the players and everybody involved.
This is about respect. This is about a line. This is about taking it to the next level. That's really what this is about. And what the NHL has said today by saying, we are fining Tom Wilson, and Emily Kaplan has this online. We're fining Tom Wilson for the punch on Buzhnevich. We don't want that in the game. We got to fine him for that. Okay, fair enough. The Panarin stuff, they are effectively saying, look, scrums happen after every type of play like this every single night. Not every play, but this happens every night in the NHL. And we are not going to try to rule on a scrum where emotions get high, players are throwing each other around because this happens every night. Effectively, what they're saying is, if this wasn't Tom Wilson, we're not even talking about it. I disagree to a certain extent because Artemi Panarin is involved here, one of your star players in the league. And this has long been an issue with the National Hockey League. Are you doing enough to protect your star players? The counter is, well, Artemi Panarin has no business going in there. All Artemi Panarin did in this situation is literally put his arms around Tom Wilson, who appears to be on top of a Rangers player at that time. Wilson rises to his feet against a much smaller Panarin, who, again, happens to be a star player. They go face-to-face. Wilson pushes his helmet off his head. Mm-hmm. Now, that type of thing happens in a scrum. It's then where Wilson takes him down. We can talk about whether he pulled his hair, whether he didn't pull his hair, whether that was definitive or not. But he throws him to the ice, and then once Panarin's down on the ice, he kind of picks him up and throws him down again. And the NHL says, well, that's the type of thing that happens every night, but it's not. That's not the type of thing that happens every night. Yeah, emotions get high, and they get heated every single night. But they don't go to that extent, and this is the question with the player here. The player has not been able to discern what is merely tiptoeing across the line and what is leaping far across it. When Tom Wilson was suspended in early March for a far different play, it was boarding on Brandon Carlo. They said, we need to send a message here because you don't quite seem to get it. I thought because of that, they would do something here. I thought because of that, they would say, you've shown us again in a different manner that you don't quite get it. That there's a way that you can be physical with Artemi Panarin or any other player in a goalmouth scrum, but it doesn't need to go to that level. But by the NHL not suspending Tom Wilson here, they're saying, actually, we need you in the playoffs. We want you in the playoffs. Because had they gone the suspension route, Karen, coming off of a 7-gamer 2 months ago, albeit for a different incident, they would have had to suspend Tom Wilson into the postseason. And by not doing that today, they're saying what we saw last night doesn't warrant suspension from anyone, even though you've got this long rap sheet.
So, Scott, I look at a few things there, and I look, want to say, like, is it going to check off some boxes? Was it a dangerous play? Check. Was it unnecessary? Check. Was there a target to the head at some point? Yes, and when he threw him down, he kind of looks like he's pulling his hair, so his head is going to go probably down and hit the ice. And now for Artemi Panarin's health, he's not going to play in the next 3 games. It said it was a lower body injury, but he could have got a lot worse. Like, he could have hit his head really hard on the ice, could have had concussion, could have been knocked out, could have been bleeding. We all know those things. Thankfully for him, he wasn't. But I look at this play, Scott, and the way that I see it, it looks like an MMA fighter picking a guy up and throwing him to the ground. And, okay, MMA fighters sign up for this. They're also on a canvas where there's a bit of spring on the ground, not an ice surface. So it's a little different. Artemi Panarin didn't sign up to get in a scrum with Tom Wilson and have himself slammed to the ice. And for me with Tom Wilson, the issue is, Scott, this is what you talked about, you know, he takes it to the next level. He seems to have a switch, and that switch is easily triggered. And it seemed to be triggered with Pavel
Buchnevich, yep.
Easy for me to say. And then it got triggered again when he found someone jumping on his back. Didn't like that happen, and then it just lost it. Like, the look on his face was, he looked like he was had tunnel vision that I'm going to go after this guy. And I just, for me, I don't want this in the NHL. And it's not just a normal scrum, because like you said, Scott, a normal scrum doesn't end up with a guy getting his head basically pal-drived into the ice. That doesn't happen every day. And so with the NHL, and when they said the Brandon Carlo thing, well, he didn't get penalized on the play. So it's kind of like the NHL was making up for the referee's not taking it, giving out the proper discipline on the ice, right? So this time he gets double minor and a 10-minute misconduct. Comes back and actually scores the empty netter to seal the game for Washington. So is the NHL looking at this and going, okay, well, the referees did their job on the ice. This is enough. Is that what they're thinking at this point? Because my point is, this is not enough. And he needs to be taught a big lesson, because guess what? He obviously isn't learning the lesson the NHL tried to send to him.
We're getting some texts coming in. Craig in Calgary says Tom Wilson needs to be banned from the NHL. There's another who says it's the taunting that took it over the top. The NHL has no consistency in rulings. Very upsetting to me. The taunting in the box adds to my anger. He went to the box. He's fired up at the time. Tom Wilson kind of does the Hulk and flexes across the ice at the Rangers bench after this is all said and done. We had another text come in that said, you said it, the bread man jumped on his back. I'll stop the text right there. He didn't jump on his back. He literally, while Wilson is in somewhat of a kneeling position on the ice, wraps his arms around Wilson to sort of tie up his arms, like, you're not going to rain down punches on one of my guys if that's what might happen here. Again, we just watched you punch one of our dudes in the head. I'm not going to let you do it again. And then Wilson gets up. He's on the back. Here's what the text goes on to say. What if Tom Wilson slipped and fell to the ice with Panarin on his back? Well, that would have been a far different story. Panarin started it, says Jerry in Calgary. He had to know if he's going to get involved with Tom. You're going to get it back worse than you give it. That's where the difference is here. Panarin is trying to tie the player up. Tom Wilson takes advantage of the situation to ragdoll him to a certain extent. And if that's the case, if that's how we're going to treat it, well, hey, you go touch Tom Wilson. He's allowed to go to whatever means he feels necessary in the heat of the moment. Then let's play this out. Let's play this out to Connor McDavid. And does that mean if Connor McDavid goes into a scrum to tie someone up who is a much tougher customer, that it's open season? That you can throw him down? Tom Wilson knows who that is. Tom Wilson sees, I'm not going to say Panarin's a foot shorter than him. We're talking about a much smaller player. There was a way that if he wanted to just sort of rough Artemi Panarin up with a little bit of chin music, or if he just wanted to say, get off me, you don't belong in here, there's a way to do that, and he didn't take that route.
It's because, Scott, he's got that thing where it just switches, and he didn't even see Artemi Panarin probably. He just saw, I don't know, blur, and he's like, I got to get this guy off me. I got to do whatever the case is. I don't care who he is. It could be anybody. And again, it's just, there's something about this that rubs me the wrong way. And you want to know how this incident, you want to know how serious it is? You know what's trending on Twitter today? The name Bertuzzi. Now, I'm not comparing it to that, but you go look and you click on Bertuzzi on Twitter, and there's a lot of people that are comparing it to the Steve Moore Todd Bertuzzi incident in terms of the outcome just wasn't as severe. Okay? Now, Panarin got off easy. He, like I said, he hit his head on the ice. Could have been a lot worse. Hit his shoulder first, it looks like, and then his head. So, again, got off pretty easy in terms of that. My point being is, this type of action doesn't need to be in the NHL. And Tom Wilson just doesn't seem to get it. And I'm concerned. What's going to happen tomorrow? Two teams play again tomorrow. If you're Washington, I mean, you're probably going to play him because he hasn't been suspended. You might sit him out because you're worried about retribution. But if we're going to talk about the code and Wade Simmons going off Alex Edler for a knee hit on Zach Hyman, a player who was suspended, what the heck's going to happen tomorrow? Like, I'm a little worried to see what's going to happen.
And here's the problem. Teams don't have Tom Wilsons. Tom Wilson is a unicorn in this league because he's a really good player, too. And we've talked about this in the past with Cheap Shots and Brad Marchand. But Wilson is big enough to fight the likes of Ryan Reeves, but good enough to play in a top six. You don't find players like that in the NHL. He's kind of in a category of his own. And the New York Rangers don't have Ryan Reeves to run out there tomorrow night. So that's not exactly what's going to happen. This text comes in. Just as if it wasn't Wilson, this wouldn't be an issue. Same can be said if it wasn't Panarin. I played hockey at a very high level, and this doesn't need to be what the media is making it. But hey, that's what you guys do, and the Rangers coach knows that. So a couple of issues within there. You're right. If it wasn't Panarin, it wouldn't be getting as much attention. If it was Brendan Lemieux, it wouldn't be getting as much attention. But Brendan Lemieux plays a role in the NHL where there's an accepted level of violence that comes with it, an accepted level of this that comes with it. That's not Artemi Panarin's deal. And pardon the pun, but he's part of the bread and butter of what you're supposed to be selling. And so it does matter that it's a big-name player here and a player who doesn't go into scrums looking to throw down with guys like Tom Wilson. And Tom Wilson knows that. And here's the question I would have to that texter and to all of you in the listening audience. 960, 960, or 650, 650. Do you want that in the game? It doesn't happen every single night with a player of Tom Wilson's repute and of Artemi Panarin's skill level, but do you want that in the game? No one is saying that there can't be some scrums after whistles, but this wasn't the regular scrum. That's not what this was last night.
This text coming in, Scott. NHL should be ashamed of this. You can see the snap in Wilson's eyes. He's an absolute goon. This one coming in as well. He needs to be out of the NHL. He showed immaturity last night when he boasted to the bench after his penalty. He should have felt shame after being an idiot like that instead of boasting. Guy is starting to seem a little unhinged, shall we see? NHL needs to step in. And then this one comes in just a second later, Scott. Love Tom Wilson. I will take him on my team every day.
Well, this is the other part. And I heard this from Rangers color commentator Joe Micheletti this morning as well. He goes, yeah, well, Wilson's sitting in the penalty box. We all know this. There's 30 teams trying to trade for him. Like, making light of the situation that any team would take this player on the roster. Any team would take the player, no question. And there are a lot of people who felt when Tom Wilson signed his contract and people looked at the dollar figure and went, wow, that's a big number for Tom Wilson. There are a lot of people that went, yeah, part of that is because he's going to forfeit some of that salary every single year due to suspension. He's actually not going to collect every single year on that.
So he's been suspended before this. Well, he's not being suspended for this. So he's, what, 30 games, Scott? He's been suspended in his career. He's forfeited $1.2 million. I believe I read, you know what his quote was after the Brandon Carlo incident? You know what he said? He said, I can't be doing this anymore. He says, I can't miss even one game for my team. That's what he said. Did he look like a player last night that thought to himself that he understood those comments? Absolutely not. And yeah, you want, a lot of people will take a Tom Wilson because if he doesn't cross the line, Scott, he can play just up to it. And you know, night in, night out, any sort of shift, he could be that sort of disturber, you know, get into the heads of the opposition, which we'll talk to in a second. Tom Wilson lives rent-free apparently in some people's heads, but it's that next level. I mean, we saw it with Brad Marchand for a long time. You know, last time Brad Marchand was suspended? January 2018. And he's learned his lesson because the Boston Bruins says, you can't be doing this anymore. You're too valuable to our team. You are hurting us. Different type of player, different type of rat, but still. Like, I don't even know, though, when you look at the comments from Peter Laviolette last night, like, is Tom Wilson even going to get a talking to from his team? He's like, oh, Peter Laviolette, it's a scrum. It's okay.
That's something we will ask. That's something we will ask Bruce Boudreau later in the show, that if you're coaching Tom Wilson today, what's the conversation? What do you do if you're Peter Laviolette? And there is a guy from years gone by, and he wasn't as good a player as Tom Wilson at the offensive end of the ice. But he's a guy who got himself a pretty big reputation. His name is Matt Cook. And one of the things that happened with Matt Cook in Pittsburgh toward the end of his career is that Cook kept going over the line, kept going over the line. And eventually, Mario Lemieux, who owns the team, sat down with Cook and said, no more here. Keep going across this. We can't support you. I'm not going to ask your teammates to support you, and this organization can't support you. You clean this crap up. Is it incumbent on the Washington Capitals to have some sort of conversation with Wilson? Look, man, we love you being a physical guy, and we love you being a shift disturber out there all the time. We just can't have you doing that.
Yeah, like, yes, they do have to have that conversation, Scott. I'm just quite concerned at the fact that just based on what I heard last night from Peter Laviolette, and he may go back and look at it and look at the real action from around the league today and the optics of it, but you have to have this conversation with the player because you can't be having these incidents happen every few months. He literally was suspended 2 months ago. 2 months ago he was suspended. Like, this is something, I'm sorry, this is something that can't be in the game. And again, this text comes in to 650-650. Is it open season on Cap Stars now? And there's another one from Mike and Victoria. Hey, guys, the Rangers should target Nick Backstrom instead of Wilson. No, that's what's wrong with this whole situation. I don't want Nick Backstrom to be targeted. I don't want to see what happens to Tom Wilson, because, like you said, Scott, in the fact that the Blue Shirts don't have anybody that can really equate to a Tom Wilson. So who are they going to throw in there? And what situation is he going to be in? Because Tom Wilson's going to be expecting it.
Someone else saying, why should Brendan Lemieux assume risk because of his role? Panarin knows the game, knows who he's tangling with. He's not tangling with anyone. So the suggestion is then that Artemi Panarin, who ends up being the victim in this case, the suggestion is that Panarin sees Wilson over his teammate after he's just punched one of his teammates in the side of the head, and that Panarin should skate away, that Panarin should not simply put his arms around Wilson from behind, that's where he is, and try to tie him up so that he doesn't inflict any more damage. Like, that's the suggestion here.
he was starting to lay punches on Ryan Strome. So, of course, Panarin's going to see that and going to want to stop that, right? Like he's, like you said, he's kind of bear-hugging him on top of him, trying to tie his arms down. That's fair enough. You can do that. He's, what, there's only probably two other players on the ice that could have done it at the time. Panarin's the closest. He goes and does that. He's standing up for his teammate. Tom Wilson's not standing up for anybody at this point when he goes after Panarin.
I played at a very high level, says the next text. Like it or not, it's a huge part of the game. It just is.
Not anymore.
Well, no, intimidation is a part of the game, Karen. Of course it is.
Oh, intimidation. Sorry, intimidation.
Yes, absolutely, intimidation is part of the game. And we do want physicality in hockey. We do. Do you want this? Do we want this? That's what we're asking our listeners today. Do you say, yeah, every once in a while it's going to get to this, but if we punish this more severely than the NHL has chosen to today, we risk taking too much more physicality out of the game. Is that what we want to do? That's what we're asking you as listeners today. Do you want that sort of thing in the game? Someone else says he needs to be out of the NHL. He showed immaturity last night when he boasted to the bench after his penalty. He should have felt shame for being an idiot like that. Instead, he boasted. Guy's starting to seem like a little psycho. The NHL needs to step in. How are people justifying what Wilson did, said the next text. Wow, that's not a normal hockey play. Doesn't belong in hockey whatsoever. You don't see that in Bush League. What standard is the NHL setting here?
This one, Scott, the NHL and the NHLPA is an absolute embarrassment with Tom Wilson. Why isn't the NHLPA protecting Panarin? So that's the thing I saw on Twitter as well, Scott. It's like, who needs the protection here? Does it need to be Panarin or Tom Wilson? And at this point, it's Panarin because he was the recipient of this act of violence. And Tom Wilson, he's done this too many times. For me, I don't know when he's going to get it, because if he made the comments after his last suspension that I need to get it, and again, he doesn't get it. Like, I don't know. I just think that it's to the point where something needs to be done excessively to quell this happening again.
Next text comes in. What Tom Wilson did was total garbage. Doesn't need to be in the game. I played high-level hockey, too. Went as far as an NHL rookie camp, says this texter. I can't think of many guys that would be okay with that. And this is something we can talk to Mike McKenna about next segment as well. I want to know if Mike's ever played with a guy that, like, in the room you kind of know. Like, man, I'm glad this guy's on our team and not against us, because I wouldn't want to deal with that. And you kind of know, but players don't always say anything. They're like, yeah, he's still our teammate, and we kind of have to have his back here. Has it ever reached the point in his career where maybe the team has a conversation with a player and said, look, man, you're a big part of this team, and look, even if you just want to look at it selfishly, like you said, Wilson admitted to a couple of months ago, Karen, saying, look, I can't miss any more games. I'm too important to this team. Does the team ever say that? Hey, man, not only might this be a little bit dangerous to the rest of our fraternity here, also, you're going to cost us a chance to win because we need you in the lineup. That's the road it went down with Nazem Kadri in Toronto. Again, not as physical a player as Tom Wilson, but a guy who got multiple suspensions. And what did the Leafs finally say? Now, I'm not saying they made a great trade. Not at all. But they finally said, we can't take the risk that it's going to cost us again. And yes, they wanted to upgrade their blue line. They thought it was going to work out much more with Tyson Barrie. But that ended up being the conversation with Nazem Kadri. We've tried having the discussion here. And you don't seem to quite get it. So I think we're going to move on this. Really good player. Colorado's happy to have him. And since Kadri left Toronto, he's found a way to be up close to the line, but not over it.
So this text just came in from Joe. If player involved is not Tom Wilson, are we even talking about this? It's a scrum. They happen all the time. No big deal. But that's the point. Maybe we're not, Scott. But the point is, this is Tom Wilson. I think in a situation like this, we'd still be discussing it because of the fact of how if you put in player X and player Y, substitute them out, we're still going to talk about it because the way the violence of Panarin falling to the ground, it looks like he's fallen by Wilson. But the point is, this is Tom Wilson, and he's doing something again to put another player in harm's way.
We're talking about this if it's Ryan Reeves. We're talking about it if it's another person who falls into a heavyweight type of player category and the receiving party is a star player. Yes, we're talking about it. Now, it may not have as much substance behind it in terms of a suspension history, but we're still talking about it. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. You're talking about it as well. Keep those texts coming in. 650, 650, 960, 960. We'll get the opinion of Mike McKenna next, and whether or not the team he follows most closely can solve a riddle that has been plaguing it all season long. We'll tell you what that is next right here on Rintoul and Sermon. Back to the Minnesota Wild.
Oh, sorry.
Here's why this is important. First of all, Minnesota actually has a chance to finish first in this division. Now, it's a little bit unlikely, still sitting third, but that division has gotten very compact in a hurry. It was Vegas, winners of 10 straight. Is Colorado going to catch them? Hey, they still got a shot. They're getting healthy. Here they come. Oh, Minnesota's just 4 points back now, all of a sudden, of division-leading Vegas. But, yeah, they're 5-1-1 against Vegas this season, which in and of itself is impressive. However, they're also exciting. This is going to be something that a lot of people can't wrap their heads around because we know what Minnesota Wild connotes to most people. What do you think of when you think of Minnesota? Yeah, Jacques Lemaire, boring hockey, nothing great about this franchise. We've seen them be good before. We've seen them under a head coach who's going to join us in the third hour of the program, Bruce Boudreau, win division titles. They just haven't done much in the playoffs, but they haven't been exciting like this. It's a tough one to wrap your head around. Chew on this for a second. The Minnesota Wild score as much as the Edmonton Oilers. That's right. The Minnesota Wild put pucks in nets in the NHL this season as often as the team with the two most prolific point producers the league has to offer. That's how much they score. They're ranked eighth in goals per game, a tick above Edmonton.
Yet, their leading goal scorer, Scott, Kirill Kaprizov, only has 45 points on the season. McDavid has 91 now. Like, not even half. You look at their scoring, though. They are very consistent throughout their lineup. They have 10 players above 20 points on the season. That includes a couple of their defensemen as well. And this is the thing, and we're going to get into this a little bit later on in the show. Because, Scott, we have to watch 56 games of the North Division this year for, you know, Vancouver and Calgary, and then we see everybody else in the North Division. I don't know if a Minnesota Wild game's been on TV this year. We get a lot of, like, Boston, Buffalo. We get a lot of the East Division, which is fine. They're good teams to watch. But we don't get a lot of Minnesota Wild hockey. I have not actually sat down and watched a game, but what I did last night is I went back and watched that third period, especially when they scored those three goals to come back from three goals down. And I thought to myself, this team comes at you in waves. They come at you waves, and they keep pushing, and they keep pushing, and they keep pushing, and they had Vegas on their heels there. Not to mention they scored two goals within about, 30 seconds to tie the game, to tie it and then take the lead. But I kept thinking to myself, wow, like, this team is not the team that sits back and play in the neutral zone like they used to. This team will come at you and generate chances.
And the first two goals were not great. Robin Leonard didn't have his best night. Should have stopped the first two. First one goes through him. Second one should have caught the puck. Instead, loose change in the slot. They end up getting a goal that way, but they seem to have the number of the Vegas Golden Knights. Mike McKenna, who follows that team very closely, is a color analyst for the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll get his opinion on why that just seems to be such a tough matchup, where Minnesota falls as far as excitement goes this year. Again, these are two words you just don't put together, wild and excitement. In a sentence you would, but when you're capitalizing the W and we're referring to a hockey team, nobody thinks of that team this way. Here's the other thing I want to know from Mike. Who starts the playoffs for the Vegas Golden Knights? Now, Fleury's had
a great year.
He's had a great year, but if you look back the last 6 to 7 weeks, they've alternated starts. They chose Leonard in the playoffs last year. We all remember the sword through the back of Marc-Andre Fleury that Alan Walsh got out there on social media, and we all had a little bit of fun with that. They've somehow repaired that relationship, and Fleury's going to be a Vezina final. He's going to be a Vezina finalist this year. There's some people who think he's going to win, and yet they've alternated starts, and they chose Leonard with the contract. We'll get into it all with Mike, who joins us as he does every single Tuesday. Mike, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great this morning. Thanks for having me like usual. Karen, Scott, always a pleasure. And hey, may the 4th be with you. I love Star Wars Day. It was one of my favorite on the ice, wearing those jerseys in warm-ups and in games. It's a fun day in the hockey world.
I agree with that. And we're both Star Wars fans. Where is the coolest jersey you ever wore? What franchise were you with?
Oh, man. I wore the two of them I wore in the minors. And the cool part about the minors, people ask me why I enjoyed playing it. You could do these wacky, zany things there. And Texas, we had these green and white and I'm not enough into Star Wars to know exactly what I'm looking at, but it's on my Twitter feed right now, and they were just so cool looking. We had kind of Stormtrooper style ones in Portland one year, and I don't know, it's tough to pick between the two, but if you check my Twitter, I posted them today, and you know, we had one moment where in Manchester one year, Darth Vader came on the ice to drop the puck, and he fell, and his head came off, and the lion mascot in Manchester had to grab his head and get it back to him, and that was a whole fiasco, and Paul Bissonnette was on the ice at the other side with Manchester for that one, and we laugh about it a lot, because that was minor league unique to see Darth Vader take a tumble at center ice.
Much different than the fiasco that happened last night between the Capitals and the Rangers, which we will get to in just one second. Mike McKenna, at Mike McKenna 56, by the way, if you would like to follow him on Twitter and check out those photos.
Shameless plug.
Absolutely. Before we get there, we were leading in with the Minnesota Wild having the number of the Vegas Golden Knights. Why can't Vegas solve that riddle this season?
Well, you know, they did the first two games of the year, and both of those were at home. Where it's really been tough has been on the road in the Excel Center in Minnesota. And, you know, they've been close games. The Golden Knights have led, but Minnesota's been able to come from behind. I mean, Vegas was going into last night, they were 24-1 leading after two periods, now 24-2. Both of those losses against the Minnesota Wild. And it's just the pluckiness of that club. The Wild never quits. They believe in themselves. And they've been through the battles. They've played a lot of close games this year, overtime games. And I really think that that's an important factor for teams going towards playoffs. You know, the best success I ever had with a team was a couple of years ago. Our Texas Stars team went to Game 7 of the Calder Cup Finals against Toronto Marlies. And you know what made us good was that we played a lot of those tough games during the season. We won a lot of overtime games. We had confidence. And you see that with the Wild. They're dynamic, and they can play different ways. They can play heavy. They can play in transition. They can battle in front of the net. They're a lot like the Golden Knights. And on some of these nights, they've out-Golden Knighted the Golden Knights.
Not a great night last night for Robin Lehner. I'm sure he wants at least the first two back in that comeback victory for the Minnesota Wild. Fleury and Lehner have alternated starts for the past 6 weeks or so. Who starts the playoffs?
Great question. And let me preface this by saying goalies want every goal back. That's one of those buzz phrases we hear, and it just sends a chill down our spine. Go, we hate every goal, man. We don't want any of them going in. But you are right, though. I mean, Robin Lehner said afterwards, "Hey, I've got to control my rebounds better. You know, I've got to come up with some saves." And I don't think that Lehner was the decision in the game. You know, I mean, the first one, he's got his stick upside down trying to get back into position, and it's just a goofy goal. And I think, though, going into playoffs, you know, it's still an open race. There's still several games left. There's five games left. But I think you do have to look at the body of work that Marc-Andre Fleury put in this year when he was really carrying the mail. I would probably at this stage give him the edge to start game one. But I think with Vegas, you're really looking at a scenario where if they think a goalie needs rest, they're going to utilize both of them. They did it in the bubble last year. Of course, that was a different scenario where you did have back-to-backs. We don't know if we'll see that this playoff. Maybe it happens. But even the opportunity to get somebody a rest, a game, maybe two games, I think it's going to happen that the Golden Knights deploy both goaltenders. It's really just the question of who plays game one and if that person plays multiple games in a row.
Mike, Scott and I were talking last week. It's like, okay, we see the matchups that could be happening in the West, but we're also both like, let's just get to Vegas, Colorado, because that's what we want to see. Now, Minnesota might have something to say about that. So might St. Louis. I'm going to pencil them in. They've got three games in hand, a five-point lead over Arizona. I mean, all signs point to them being the fourth team in
Definitely.
The playoffs. Can they make any sort of noise in this division? Do they still have enough talent to do that?
I think St. Louis has enough to make noise, like you said, yes. But I don't think that they're in the echelon of Minnesota, Colorado, and Vegas. St. Louis has been so streaky this season, and they haven't been able to really put it together for long stretches. You know, you look at the consistency needed in playoffs, and that's really what hasn't been there for them. They're a good team. They still have players that are capable, but they're a lot different team than when they won the Cup. Petrangelo isn't there. Alex Steen retired. Tarasenko's been in and out. You know, there's been moving parts, and it feels like they haven't had that mojo. And Minnesota's for real. I mean, this is not just Vegas and Colorado. Minnesota 100% has an opportunity to upset, especially when you look at the matchup between them and Vegas. But if it ends up being Colorado and Minnesota, then it becomes really interesting because either of those teams pose a formidable opponent. And that's what's made this season just so intriguing. You keep playing the same teams. Now you're going to face them in playoffs all over again. How can you find a tactical advantage for those seven-game series?
We saw Devin Dubnyk is put in COVID protocol yesterday. Philip Grubauer has been back for two games, two starts, and two wins. But we know why Colorado went and got Dubnyk, because goalie depth, and we saw what happened in the bubble last year with them. Is there any concern for you with the situation?
There's always concern in Colorado when it comes to goaltending, isn't there? And this isn't just projecting what the media thinks, okay? Like, we'll create a controversy on anything. And, oh, man, I realize I just broke through the fourth barrier. I said we like I was media, not a player anymore.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, this is a turning point in my broadcasting career. Oh, my gracious.
Welcome to the dark side,
Karen Scott. Send help. Send a fruit basket. No player's going to ever talk to me again. But it's interesting to think about this because I don't know necessarily where it's going to head, but I think that Grubauer is a very good goaltender. I just worry about him staying healthy. And that's the X factor. And, you know, they got insurance by picking up Johansson from the Buffalo Sabres. And he actually played very admirably when he came in. But you know what? Michael Hutchinson did that last year as well, and he still is being blamed as the reason why Colorado couldn't move on. So, you know, you're kind of, whether you do something or not, you're going to face that backlash. And I just think there's question marks, period, because they just don't know who's going to be in the net. Whereas you look at a team like Vegas, hey, they've got two goalies. They feel comfortable with both of them. It really doesn't matter who goes in for them.
Mike McKenna joins us every single Tuesday, former NHL goaltender, current analyst with the Vegas Golden Knights, and he's on Rintoul and Sermon. Tom Wilson, you saw what happened. You saw what the league did. What should the league have done, in your opinion?
I'm just surprised that there wasn't more given because of the fact that I don't think sucker punch is the right word, because it was a short jab. It's not like he wound up from the back of the fences and drilled Buchnevich, but it was still hard. And you've got a guy in a really prone position who can't defend himself. To me, that's worth more than a fine. I was surprised by it. And just given the fact that they've made such a point of emphasis on repeat offenders, right? But this wasn't a target the head hit, so maybe it's a different scenario. All the wrestling around afterwards is... it's kind of new here nor there for me, because
really?
I think historically you see people take falls, and I do. Yeah. You know, I mean, Panarin's helmet's off. Did Wilson yank his hair? I can't really tell. It looks like it, but you know, you've got one guy who's stronger than the other or better on his skates in that type of scenario, pushing the other person down. So I'm just surprised, like I say, about that jab when Buchnevich was really prone and couldn't defend himself. To me, that was taking advantage of somebody, whereas, you know, Panarin and Wilson wrestling around again, that was more of just two guys trying to get an upper hand and one person went down in a bad way.
Interesting. We've had some people that have responded in a similar manner, but the vast majority of our texters have come at it from the same point of view as Karen and I, that Wilson's taken advantage of a much smaller player in Panarin, throws him to the ice, and then kind of picks him up and throws him back down to the ice as well. Happens to be a star player. My issue with Wilson isn't the type of player he is. It's the fact that he doesn't just cross the line. He seems to jump right past it. I'm surprised the league did not send more of a message here, but you're suggesting that, hey, you get into a scrum, anything goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it works. I mean, if two guys decide to fight and somebody gets knocked out, you're both getting 5 minutes for fighting. And I know that sounds harsh, but that's just the reality of the hockey world. And I mean, there's plenty of people that'll say, well, the Rangers don't have a deterrent for Wilson and he can do whatever he wants, right? I mean, that's part of this too. Like, it's when Ryan Reeves is in the lineup for the Golden Knights, it's really quiet on the ice from the other team, put it that way. And I think there's still value in that. I am by no means a person who wants to go back in time to the days of people getting hurt and putting their life on the line on the ice like it felt like for a while. I don't want that, but I do think you have to hold people accountable, and sometimes bad things can happen when two people become engaged in physicality on the ice.
Mike, my concern then points towards tomorrow. We know about the quote-unquote code. when it comes to players on your team sticking up for other players when a situation like this sometimes happens. We saw it with Wayne Simmons going after Alex Edler for his hit on Zach Hyman a week earlier, and Edler did get suspended for it. So you said, okay, yeah, well, the Rangers don't have anyone to stick up for or to kind of stand up to Tom Wilson. But is there some concern that maybe the Rangers, because they don't have someone to go after Tom Wilson, go after a star player on the Capitals?
You know, I saw that suggested the other yesterday even by a former NHLer who's in media now that, yeah, he said basically I'd start taking runs at their best players. And the thing is, I see a lot of that said, but I see really little action with it anymore. You know, like in a post-game scrum, somebody will say, well, they better keep their head up. They better watch out. And then the next game, nothing happens. And that's kind of what it's turned into in some ways. You're almost surprised to see any real physicality, fisticuffs come from something previously. I mean, even last night between the Golden Knights and the Wild, it was a really spirited, emotional game. There were scrums, people jabbing each other with their gloves on, but nobody actually dropped the gloves and fought. You know, that's kind of what you see now. And I do understand the code. I don't like when players go after somebody just for a big hit, like seems to happen now. That bugs me. A big clean hit doesn't mean you have to fight. But I do think that there's certain moments in the game where, yeah, like you got to take care of it yourself. You got to take care of it for your teammates. And that's why all the players overwhelmingly want to keep fighting in the game.
Mike, have you ever been in a locker room with a player on your roster? And I'm not saying you feel this way about Tom Wilson. I'm just wondering if you've ever been on a roster with a player that you thought was kind of reckless, unable to control his behavior heated moments.
Francis Lessard. Frankie Lessard couldn't control himself in practice, in games, in the defensive zone, on the forecheck. He was just an absolute weapon on the ice. And I mean, to both teams, he was a whirling dervish. You didn't know where he was going to end up. He would bury people and practice so hard. He made everybody nervous. And he was a guy who just loved to fight. And I remember I walked into the weight room one day, this was in Binghamton. We were playing together and I see he's got a bar on the rack and he's got dumbbells or two big plates on each side, right? 45 pound plates. I don't know what the equivalent is in metric. I'm sorry for my Canadian friends, but a plate on each side. And usually that's like a bench press warm up. Well, Frankie grabs this bar and he starts doing tricep presses with it. It's 135 pounds doing tricep presses. And I'm looking at this guy going, I don't think I could do 50 pounds of that. And this is the guy who would go on the ice and just run people. So yeah, Frankie was a hazard. He had a roll of tape on each ankle. And man, anybody that ever played with him's got some pretty funny Frankie stories.
Okay, so he was a hazard on the ice. Was there ever a conversation in the dressing room with either the players or a coach or someone in management went, look, man, we know that you can be an intimidator out there, but you're going too far. Does that conversation ever occur?
No, we were terrified of him. Frankie did whatever he wanted. I mean, I don't know if management ever sat him down or coaching staff, but kind of let him be, you know, like guys like that are scary enough. You kind of let them do their own thing and you hope you get out of the way of them and you're just ready for anything, you know. But this is also almost 10 years ago and you would always have other people ready to step in and do things and back them up. And it wasn't just a one-man show like it is now with a lot of teams.
Hey, Mike, great stuff as always. We appreciate the conversation. Once again, at MikeMcKenna56 on Twitter. You can check out those Star Wars jerseys and much more because you're always tweeting interesting things. Thank you very much for the conversation.
Thanks, Mike.
Oh, you're welcome. This was a fun one today. Hey, I'm telling you, Star Wars Days is the best. So may the fourth be with everyone. Thanks for having me.
Dropped it twice. I like it. That is Mike McKenna. He'll be back with us next Tuesday as well. Texters coming in. Finally, some sense. Thanks, Mike. I agree, says this texter. The Buchnevich one was worse. Face down on the ice. Arms tied up. That punch was worse. Someone else. Thank you, Mike. Someone that's actually played in the league and totally gets it. Thank you about the Tom Wilson fiasco. That's fine. That's why we bring people on and have different conversation. That's why we encourage all of you. 650, 650, 960, 960. We don't all have to see this the same way, but these are the types of discussions that get hockey fans fired up.
And I appreciate where Mike's coming from, too. He's been in the locker rooms in the NHL, and it made different levels of hockey. He's played with different players in all sorts of different situations and sees it a little differently than you and I did, Scott. And maybe he sees it differently because he is a former NHL player. I just look at the situation, and I look at it more from the angle of, yes, this is Tom Wilson. And I can't get past the fact that this is Tom Wilson doing something again where he's putting a player potentially in harm's way twice in the situation. Because, again, that Buchnevich punch, it wasn't to the head. It was kind of the back of the neck, I guess, head area. But, yeah, his face was down into the ice. His arms were pinned. It could have been a little bit more of a scarier situation, too. And then what happened with Panarin? He could say that it's part of, like, scrums and, you know, Panarin's not as good on his feet in that sort of situation, lost his feet. I see it a little differently. I do. I'm sorry. I see it as Tom Wilson being Tom Wilson.
And we have a sampling. Here's a sampling from the inbox. The thing is, Ryan Reeves or a player like that would not do this because they have a filter. Don't flip a switch, says this texter. Next texter, I can't disagree with you more, Scott and Karen. As a retired official of pro hockey for 15 years all over North America, Wilson punching the Ranger player is the wrong part. But Panarin instigated his conflict by trying to grab Wilson from behind. I'm betting Wilson doesn't even know who's on his back till he threw him down. Panarin trying to intervene is okay, but he's a star player, not his role. You can't have it both ways. I think Wilson knows by the time they get up. I don't think he knows who's on his back originally, but then they get up, and once they square around face-to-face and Wilson gets his helmet off, I think he knows who's there. That's my personal opinion. You're welcome to yours. I think he knows who that is, and I think he takes advantage of a smaller player who happens to be a star player in that case.
There also is, Scott, the fact that he's just seeing red enough that he doesn't care who it is either. That he's just seeing red, and he's going to do whatever he's going to do, and it doesn't matter if it's a trained Panarin or someone else. And again, if that is the case, Scott, whether he sees them or not, if he's just seeing red, that situation to me is worrisome as well.
Very spirited first hour with our texters. We didn't even get to the rest of the story in the National Hockey League. We will this next segment. We're also going to talk to Ty Dunn next hour as well. You want to talk about a guy who knows something about Aaron Rodgers, the history with the Green Bay Packers, where this might be going. Ty Dunn is the guy, one of the best feature writers in the NHL, or pardon me, in the NFL. Not the NHL. I've got that on the brain right now. We're also going to hear from John Scott, a guy who played the tough guy role. We'll see what he has to say as players continue to weigh in on this Tom Wilson situation. And I know why the argument's being made in the National Hockey League right now, because I saw it made in the NFL just a few months ago. I'll tell you the parallel next on Rintoul and Sermon. It's Rintoul and Sermon. We spent most of the first hour on Tom Wilson, and this is a very passionate topic, so we want to get more of your texts in this segment. But we do need to talk a little bit about Connor McDavid here and a conversation that all of a sudden was going on social media yesterday. And there's an irony to it that is amusing to me, because the stat stuffing continues for Connor McDavid. He had another 4 points last night. He's up to 31 goals, 60 assists, 91 points, and he's done that in 50 games. To put that in perspective, I'll give you two frames of reference here, Karen. One, he's the third player in NHL history to hit those numbers, at least 30 goals and at least 60 assists in 50 or fewer games. The only other guys who've done it are Gretzky and Lemieux. Now, yeah. Gretzky did it 9 times, and Lemieux did it 5 times. Regardless, he's on a list with those two guys, and the list is very short. Here's the other frame of reference. McDavid's played 50 games. The last time we saw a shortened NHL season to this regard was 2012-2013. That was a lockout-shortened season, 48 games. Marty St. Louis won the Art Ross that year in 48 games. He had 60 points. McDavid has 60 assists. Just a frame of reference for you, right? That's the kind of season he's having. It's insane.
Yeah, what he's doing, Scott, is just absolutely ridiculous right now. He made it look easy again last night. You could argue that, you know, his first goal, Braden Holtby had it and probably one that shouldn't go in. But still, I mean, you have to be lucky to be good and good to be lucky. And those are the goals that are going to go in for Connor McDavid right now. His assist last night on that first Puljujärvi goal, that Draisaitl McDavid to Puljujärvi, I mean, it just looks simple and Holtby was way out of position. And that's what happens when you play guys like this. Here's the set that I found very interesting, and it's not, maybe it's more of an indictment on kind of what the Canucks threw out there last night, but Connor McDavid has 23 times the points as the entire Canucks bottom six dressed last night. 23 times. Now, again, might be more of an indictment on the players that were playing for the Canucks, but still, when one player on the ice has that kind of point total more than what six other players do, it's pretty impressive. What he is doing this season is, it's the Connor McDavid revenge tour, and we're just all here to watch it.
So Connor McDavid is clearly the Hart Trophy winner. I mean, he's going to lap the field for the Art Ross. He could shut it down now and nobody's catching him. He's going to win the Hart Trophy. But this happens every single time there's an overwhelming favorite. The guys, stop for a second. Because you're so concerned with Connor McDavid and his exploits, you're not paying attention to this guy. And this guy in the NHL right now is Austin Matthews, who scored again last night, and he is having an incredible season of his own. He's got 39 goals in the 48 games he's played. He's going to easily win the Rocket Richard Trophy this year. We all know that. And people are projecting out what it would be over an 82-game season, and he'd be a 60-plus goal scorer if he were able to maintain this pace. We don't see that very often. Those are the types of numbers we associate with Alexander Ovechkin. I'm not surprised the case is starting to be fashioned for Austin Matthews. And I repeat, he's not going to win the award. But I understand why people are doing this, because they feel he's been overlooked somehow. It is amusing to me that given how much Toronto pushes Toronto stories on the rest of Canada, that there are people putting their hands up and saying, guys, you're not paying attention to somebody who plays in the center of the universe.
This is just the fact that, Scott, there is attention on someone else other than Austin Matthews and the center of the universe. He's one of those players. It's just Toronto fan base going, well, wait, but what about our guy? Stop talking about your guy. What about our guy? Here's the thing. Austin Matthews, like you said, is having a phenomenal season. Sometimes, though, Scott, there are phenomenal seasons, and then there are seasons that are just better than that. And that is all Connor McDavid's doing. No one is going to say, okay, Austin Matthews is not having a good year. He should not be in the same conversation as Connor McDavid. Yes, it's fine. You can have the conversation, but also with the caveat, sorry, it's just not as good as what Connor McDavid's doing.
So this is where I saw this happen 4 months ago. I saw it in the NFL because Austin Matthews is having a great year. And in any other year, Austin Matthews might win the Hart Trophy. Problem is, Connor McDavid's having this season. Aaron Rodgers, by season's end, clearly won the MVP, and nobody was going to argue with it. It started as Russell Wilson, and hey, he's never even had an MVP vote. This is the year he's the guy to catch, and then Wilson fell off. Well, it's got to be Patrick Mahomes now. Actually, the guy in Green Bay's playing really well, and as Mahomes had a couple of tough outings by his standards, Rodgers continued to excel. And as mentioned, by season's end, it was Aaron Rodgers' award, and very few people were willing to argue against it. The guy that played the parallel role to Austin Matthews in the NFL last season was Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry had over 2,000 yards rushing. And in many seasons in NFL history, if you get to 2K, you are the MVP. Like, if you get there, it's your award. We have that as a gold standard rushing number. And if you pass that, and you're one of the very few people to do that, we either give you the MVP or you are damn close. That's Austin Matthews this year. He's having a great season. The problem is Connor McDavid's having the Aaron Rodgers season where he throws 48 touchdown passes and just 5 interceptions, and there's nothing to argue about.
The only thing, Scott, is I don't even think Austin Matthews would win Offensive Player of the Year in terms of when it comes to what Derrick Henry did, because he won Offensive Player of the Year, right, in the NFL, and then Aaron Rodgers won MVP, and that's how they kind of, I think they were like, okay, well, voters said, well, we know Aaron Rodgers is going to get the MVP. Let's give the other one to Derrick Henry. I don't think even Austin Matthews, if there were 2 awards to go in that sort of situation, would even win that this year, just based on what Connor McDavid's doing. Again, Toronto fans, don't worry. Like, here's the thing, Scott. It seems that Toronto fans are just like, wait, but now I have to be protective of Austin Matthews. I think Austin Matthews knows the kind of season Connor McDavid's having and is like, it's okay. He can win it this year. I'm still having a phenomenal season. And in the end, does it matter what awards either of the two get, Scott? Because with these two teams, individual awards don't matter. You know what matters? Getting out of the first round of the playoffs. That's what matters to both of these players. Yeah, they might be on a hit 40, hit 100. It might be in the back of their minds. But either for these two players, I don't think awards matter at the end. I think first round playoff wins matter a lot more to these two players.
Well, McDavid, I should say, was asked on the broadcast after the game last night, who's the MVP? Dan Murphy had a little bit of fun with him, and he kind of laughed and said, I can't answer that question. He's having a great season. They're friends. Matthews, like Derrick Henry, he's going to get something. He's going to get an award. It's called the Rocket Richard Trophy. He's going to get that this year, and McDavid's going to take the other two. It's as simple as that. I do want to get more of your texts in, because people are very passionate about the Tom Wilson subject, and there is disagreement. There is disagreement in the fan base, and there are many people that sided with Mike McKenna, who gave us an honest opinion, and we will get some more honest opinions here coming up. We'll, and some of them are biased. Some of them you can say, well, that guy played that role. You're going to hear from John Scott in just a couple minutes. We got a lot coming in, so let's get to some of these.
Bro, what are you talking about, man?
What are you saying?
Not saying anything.
You're saying something?
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooks.
Here's what they're saying.
Okay, your text in just a couple of minutes. You'll hear from both sides. Now, it doesn't influence my opinion, but some are going to say that the home broadcasters are what influences the opinion. We've already had that question come in, 960, 960, 650, 650. Well, if the Rangers broadcast team wasn't so up in arms, would anybody be making a big deal about this? Yes, I think they would, for a couple of different reasons, many of which we've outlined in the first segment of the show. Here's a member of the Rangers broadcast team, by the way, who was on Toronto radio this morning. We'll lose the background music here, and then we will get to Joe Micheletti, who is a former NHL player. But, yeah, he calls the Rangers game, so there's probably an implicit bias there. Here's what he had to say this morning on the Fan 590 about Tom Wilson.
This was not started by a Ranger. You know, nobody cheap-shotted Tom Wilson. No one, you know, slashed him, speared him, did anything to and we know this is an emotional sport. Like, none of that happened. You know, so that's what makes this, again, I you know, you ask yourself, what the hell could he possibly be thinking to do something like this, especially after all these things he said about, you know, going down the playoffs, the importance of the team, the importance of the playoffs. You know, that's all garbage. That's all just garbage, what he says and how he really thinks. And so what he did was, you know, just off the charts. And it was not a reaction to anybody provoking him. This was just him trying to be a complete bully and have no respect for the game or the players that were on the ice.
So that's Joe Micheletti. And again, people go, ah, you're a Rangers broadcaster. How about John Scott? John Scott doesn't work for the Rangers. John Scott played the tough guy role. Now, he's nowhere near the level of actual hockey player that Tom Wilson is. But John Scott mixed it up with the best of them and the biggest of them. And here's what John Scott said today about the incident and the resulting punishment, if you want to call it that, that the league handed out in the form of a $5,000 fine.
I just finished up doing a great video talking about Tom Wilson, what his suspension should be, how it was a gutless move on his part, throwing around Panarin and punching Buchnevich in the face when he was on the ground in a prone position, just gutless, terrible hockey. I was saying how, you know, much I used to respect Tom Wilson. He plays the game the way I like it to be played. He's physical. He hits. He plays on the edge. That's what I love about him. And I think he crossed the line this time. And then I just get the news that he gets fined $5,000. Like, what? What on earth is happening with the NHL right now? George Parros completely dropped not only the ball, he dropped everything, dropped his drawers, dropped everything. It was a joke of a fine. And listen, I love this type of hockey. I think we all do. But what Tom did was just, you can't, there's no excuse for that. It's just, it's insane to me that he only got a $5,000 fine. He's a repeat offender. He's done this time in and time out. I don't know. I don't know if George has some kind of dog in this race. He wants Washington to win the cup. I honestly don't know. I have no words for it. It's insane to me that he gets a $5,000 fine. It really is incredible. What this means, though, is that it's fair game, baby, in any scrum. It's honestly fair game. If you go into a scrum anywhere on the ice and you see a star player, I'm throwing sucker punches, I'm grabbing this guy, I'm twisting ankles, I'm doing whatever I can, because the worst thing that's going to happen to me is a $5,000 suspension. Because I can't see anybody doing more than what Tom Wilson did to Panarin. Honestly, I feel bad for Panarin. The guy comes in to help out his teammate just to kind of try to calm things down, and Wilson jumps on his back. I know, shame on you, NHL. You should have did something to protect the Panarin. And then shame on Wilson, man. You got to know better.
Yes. That's what I agree with as well. I see it the same way John Scott did. Mike McKenna disagreed. He saw it differently. Many of our texters disagree as well. This is a guy who played a role where he was going into scrums to mix it up. And this is the fear, Karen. Like, this is the fear that if that is allowed to go, then it could be open season. And the only reason it's not open season is one word: respect. But that means every other player has to have the type of respect that Tom Wilson last night didn't seem to have.
Scott, what happens when the playoffs happen? Whistles tend to go away. Suspensions tend to not happen. It's more of a, if they do, it has to be an egregious act. So if you're listening to what John Scott had to say there, and it's open season, what could we see from Tom Wilson in the playoffs? He knows what he can get away with now. He does. He just got away without a suspension for doing this. What happens in the playoffs in a 7-game series where tensions run even higher than they ran last night between one team that's in the playoffs and one team that's not making the playoffs? Like, here's the thing. Like, the Rangers aren't making the playoffs. I get it's high intensity at the end of the season, but what happens when the intensity is ramped up that much more and that much more is on the line? What is Tom Wilson going to do? Anything? Basically. We've seen the switch can be flipped in a second, and it doesn't take much to get him there.
This text comes in. Cassian gets two for tossing Tkachuk around in January of last year. Wilson Panarin seems like a way bigger mismatch. Plus, Wilson was suspended within the past 90 days. Keep spinning that wheel, Department of Player Safety, and the safety is in quotes, and you can understand why. If Tom Wilson could be more like Dustin Byfuglien, says this next text, I think he'd be more respected. Dustin knew he was bigger and stronger than most players, but usually used his side to control violence instead of lashing out in violence. The next text, this is how guys are really, really going to get hurt. Since the NHL isn't going to do anything about it, a player will now take this into their own hands. It may not even be a guy from the Rangers. This inaction from the league is going to lead to an even more dangerous situation. And the word respect, we toss it around somewhat casually, but it really is inherent to this discussion. So the Winnipeg Jets, we'll take the Winnipeg Jets, who are reeling, by the way. We haven't even gotten to that part of the story. Montreal finds a way to win again last night, coming back from a third period deficit. Jets lose for a seventh straight time, despite outplaying the Ottawa Senators. They're tied up in the North. What's the Winnipeg Jets meal ticket if they're going to do something in the playoffs?
I'd say Nikolaj Ehlers.
I'd say Connor Hellebuyck.
Okay.
Like, if he doesn't play extremely well, do they really have a chance of doing anything? Nope, they don't.
Probably not, no.
Right? So why don't, and this has been brought up, like, why don't players just go run the goaltender and put him out of the series? And the answer is respect. They could do it. Somebody could go run Hellebuyck and go, man, if we take this dude out of the series, what chance do they have? And if we lose me, that's not that big of a deal. But if they lose him, that's a really big deal. But players don't do that because it dishonors the game. Now, that is a wide gap between what happened last night and what I'm suggesting you could do. But it's the same type of conversation. Like, why doesn't a guy like Panarin, who's way smaller and not there to fight, why does he get tossed down like that? Because of a lack of respect.
And that's what I think the head coach for the Rangers was saying. Like, he has no respect for the game. Mika Zibanejad, after the game, Scott, said the exact same thing. He doesn't have respect for other players on the ice. You don't get suspended, Scott, 30 times in your career, 30 games in your career, sorry, if you have respect for the other players on the ice. And I think that is a situation where Tom Wilson is at right now. It's just, do you want to see this in the game? That's where the question is. Does this need to be in the game? Tom Wilson, when he's not doing this, is an effective player. But here's the problem. Tom Wilson does this too many times. And I don't know how the league can overlook the fact that he is a repeat offender, exactly how the rule book paints the picture. He literally got suspended 2 months ago, 7 games. Like, that is a repeat offender if there ever was one. So I don't understand how the NHL looks at this and thinks, okay, it's just another guy. You know, this is a common hockey play, and we're going to let this go. Like, it just, that's why I question is, what is player safety thinking? What are they thinking, and why can't they figure it out?
We got so many texts on this, and we'll get to them. We'll filter them in throughout the course of this show. We want to have you as part of the conversation. The two that I'm chuckling at, one, why did Panarin not get a third man in? I don't know, because it wasn't an actual fight. And he wasn't there to fight. He was literally just putting his arms around a guy, as John Scott described. And the other one that came in, do you have a LinkedIn account? Yes. I don't know why you're texting me that, but thank you very much. Or maybe it's someone texting you, Karen. Yeah, if you would like to talk to us on some sort of professional platform, you can do that as well. It's Rintoul, it's Sermon. One more clip to get in here. We mentioned it yesterday with G. Roy Simon. It's not going to get a lot of fanfare today, understandably so. Man, a hell of an exercise for CFL teams to try to engage in trying to select players in their draft that goes down today, many of whom did not play football last season because of the pandemic. Stephen Brunt was on this morning in Calgary and was asked the question, could this actually be the last CFL draft ever?
What's going to happen, when they're going to play, if they're going to play, you know, but if they play this year, they will play under the existing rules with the existing quotas for nationals, you know, what we used to call Canadians, nationals. And so you would have to draft those guys and sign those guys and play X number of them, have an X number of them on your roster. But if the league proceeds down the path towards some kind of merger, or joint venture or whatever it's going to be called with the XFL next spring, and which is still very much a live issue at this as we speak. It is, you know, nobody on the CFL side is shying away from this at all. They will not, you know, they may have a token number of Canadians on rosters for Canadian teams just to be able to say it. But, you know, you're talking about a handful, and I guess maybe you would still have a draft to disperse those guys if the Canadian teams are part of a larger North American league. But those CFL draftniks who are out there, you know, that's those people who are talking about Canadians in NCAA programs and Canadians in the CIS who didn't play at all last year. So, you know, it's pretty, you've got to kind of know the territory pretty well to even discuss it. Will at very least be talking about something that is less significant, much smaller, and maybe heading down the path of the dodo.
Brunt is an avid CFL fan. Like, if people don't know Stephen Brunt's background, he is a Hamilton Ticats, dyed-in-the-wool CFL fan, went to games as a kid, goes to games now, like, loves the league. He's very fearful for the future of this league.
And I think I agree with him to some point, Scott, because one, the CFL has to play this season. And they have to find a way to do it, and they have to find a way to do it with fans. And there are some concerns that they may have to start the season without fans, and can they do that financially? Is that viable? The CFL game also, Scott, is important to Canadians in terms of Canadians and playing the game. How many Canadians do you have to have on the field at one point in time during the game?
You got to start a certain amount on both sides of the ball. You got to have a certain amount on your roster, right?
So it's important that Canadians still have a place to go play. And I understand the fact that Canadian talent south of the border is getting, that players can play south of the border in the NFL is getting a lot stronger. And that is absolutely fantastic, Scott, but we still need Canadian contact in the CFL. So I think that's where Stephen Brunton's coming from.
The question is, if the XFL is involved, does that all go away? And that's the great fear. And that's why you saw a lot of backlash from traditionalists who support this league. And you saw a lot of other people saying, you know what? We need 7 national players. We need those guys to start. And we need a certain amount of nationals on each roster. Because if not, where are the next wave of Canadians coming? It's a fair point, and all of this is up in the air right now, Karen. The one thing I've been able to take out of it over the last couple months is how many people in this country love football. So, if it's rebranded, does that change anything? Does it get more people interested? Like, I think there's a general acceptance everything here needs to adapt. It's to what extent?
This text just came in. Scott, I would just like to point out, you and I have the same opinion on this Tom Wilson hit, right? Like, we don't think it should have happened. They think there should have been a suspension.
Yeah.
We think it was dirty. Karen, please shut up. Men like fighting and hitting. Unsigned text. Of course, unsigned. Is it just because, like, come on, you and I have the exact same thing, opinion on this. We have the exact same opinion on this, and that's the text that come in. It's going to be one of those days, Scott. It's going to be one of those days where I'm going to say woo-saw a whole heck of a lot when it comes to looking at the inbox.
Sign your name. Keep the misogyny to yourself, if that's how you feel. It's Rintoul. It's Sermon. Ty Dunn. What's going on with Aaron Rodgers? The backstory and what the future holds. That's coming up next on Rent, Tool, and Sermon. The Aaron Rodgers story, it almost felt like we didn't give it enough time last week because so much was happening. And this is now simmering in the background around the National Football League. Like, you're talking about, I don't know, Sidney Crosby saying, Mario, I want out of here. I don't know if there's a perfect comparison because he's won a bunch of times. Rodgers has only won the one trophy, and many people view it as the Packers being the obstacle between him and more championships because they haven't surrounded him with enough talent. Some people have been loath to go down the Rodgers could have done more road. And I don't know exactly who the player is, but we're talking about a guy who's been associated with an historic franchise for a very long time. It's hard to imagine him in any other uniform, but if Tom Brady can leave New England and Tom Brady can go somewhere else, and maybe that's part of the thinking here. Hey, he was able to divorce himself from the franchise he will always be associated with, and look what he did with a team that went, yeah, man, you come here, we'll do whatever you want. Maybe that has something to do with this. We'll get your mic on in a second here, Karen. We'll get your mic on in a second. It's Rent, Tool, it's Sometimes Sermon. Keep those texts coming in. You know, we had somebody, we're going to talk Aaron Rodgers, we're going to talk football here in just 1 second. We're going to talk football. We just keep have texts rolling in. I had somebody text into the inbox a moment ago, 960-960-650-650. We had somebody text in saying, hey, why are you guys talking so much about the Tom Wilson incident? Like, why are you lighting your hair on fire? That came from Fletch, the Lakers fan. Fletch, you need to worry about the Lakers a little bit right now, whether they're going to have to play in a play-in round. That's one of the things. We got you back, Karen. But one of the reasons we're talking about it so much is because after leading the show with it, you all have very strong opinions. And we encourage you day in, day out to get those in. And if you want to weigh in on one side or the other, and we continue to get texts, we're going to try to get you involved in the program. We talked Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, the mirage of a debate to me that some are trying to have about who the Hart Trophy winner is and who's the most valuable player in the league this season. We get like two texts. Well, people want in on this Wilson conversation because it is a very polarizing one.
Yeah, it absolutely is, Scott. And you and I, we try and find a topic that, you know, is going to engage our listening audience in a bunch of different views, and so that our listeners have a platform to give their views as well, and then we can discuss if we agree or disagree with them. So this is probably going to be a conversation that we have throughout the show, and I think it's a fair one because there are different sides to it, and we're seeing that. And I just take the side where this is something that is not necessary to the league. And someone texted in, Scott, and they said, do you like UFC? Then stop whining about the scrum between Capitals, Wilson, and the Rangers. Well, here's the thing. I love the UFC. I actually fell in love with it in the pandemic because it was the only thing on, and it's like sports, and I can watch live events. But I'm signing up to watch violence of people who agreed to do that. This is what they agree to do. They're stepping in that octagon to fight each other. That's not what you're doing on the ice. Arturi Panemin doesn't step on the ice expecting to have Tom Wilson throw him down and throw a sucker punch at him and then pick him up and try and throw him down again. This is just not something he agrees to do. Yeah, you agree for an intense battle. There's some scrums that may happen. You know, you may get a stick in the face. You may get punched along the way by accident in a scrum. But Scott, you're not signing up for violence in the setting that's like UFC. That is why I don't want this in the game. They're two separate things, and I don't even think they're comparable.
We will get back into your text on that subject when we get to the top of the hour. We got Make Your Case coming up. That's not the debatable topic du jour, but we will get to that throughout the course of the program. Keep those texts coming in. We had somebody say if you're looking for a reference for Aaron Rodgers, maybe Ovechkin would be a better comparable. He's only won one Stanley Cup. They should have done better to surround him with talent. That's Graham from Nanaimo. I don't think surrounding him with talent has ever been a question in Washington. But we'll look for a comparable as Ty Dunn from GoLongTD.com, one of the best feature writers in the NFL, joins us. Now, Ty, thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
No problem whatsoever, and it's always a pleasure to visit with you, and you'll get to on-air meet my new co-host, Karen Sermon, in just 1 second. You have chronicled Aaron Rodgers' relationship with the Packers and his teammates over the years. Are you more surprised that he dropped an explosive story hours before the NFL draft or that he waited an entire year to detonate it?
Man, I would say
I'd say I was surprised that it took a year. You know, I do think it was probably smoldering there for a while because, you know, management flew out to California. They're trying to reconcile. They're trying to talk contract. And they just can't find common ground. I mean, when you're out, you're out. Like, if Aaron Rodgers is cutting you out, you're done. I mean, we've seen that time and time again. That's the pattern. That's the playbook here. So I can't see how these two sides meet in the middle. One report after another. Obviously, it'd be great to hear from Rodgers himself. He has chosen to kind of work through the media and surrogates and all that kind of stuff. But we know where he stands. He wants out. He's telling teammates he wants out. He basically said, yeah, he wants the GM fired for him to come back. So I can't see how they find a way to get him back there. He's willing to sit. You know, like, he's got money. Money ain't a problem for Aaron Rodgers. I think he'd be okay losing billions of dollars. Kind of getting ahead of myself here, but I just think for so many reasons, as we wrote on GoLongTV.com, like, a trade just has to happen. I think we're going to see it post June 1st.
Now, he's not the first quarterback to go down this road, and it's obviously more explosive than what Russell Wilson said a couple of months ago. And Deshaun Watson, that's a whole different story because of the allegations, very serious ones that have arisen since he said he would never play again for the Houston Texans. There is no way in your estimation that time can repair the relationship to the point where Aaron Rodgers once again suits up for the Green Bay Packers?
I think that's probably what Green Bay is going to hope for. You know, I think they're hopeful that it gets to that point, that maybe he cools down, you know, with a little time and kind of sees what they see. I mean, he's got it pretty good in Green Bay. This is a team that has gone 13-3 back-to-back years. There were a couple poor throws away from the Super Bowl last year. He was the MVP. He's got the freedom at the line of scrimmage to really do whatever he wants. You know, talk to teammates there. And they say, yeah, there's two playbooks. There's Matt LaFleur's playbook and there's Aaron Rodgers' playbook. And he changed his play. That's what he wanted, right? I mean, he won the power struggle with Mike McCarthy. He got that head coach out. He got the offense he wanted to run. They put one of the best offensive lines in front of him. They've given him a really great running game. Devontae Adams may be the best receiver in the NFL. Bob Tonyan, one of the best tight ends. I think it's a great situation. I just don't think if Aaron Rodgers hasn't seen it yet, I don't think he's just going to all of a sudden see it and agree. He clearly wants them to throw in the towel on Jordan Love and contractually make it where he's the guy, you know, beyond this year, probably beyond the next year. And that would mean basically kind of admitting you made a poor draft choice in Jordan Love. So is Green Bay there? Yeah. Are they willing to do that? I don't think so. That's just not how they do business. It's old school. It's the GMs pick the players, the coaches coach the players play, and they drafted Love for a reason.
Ty, I wouldn't have been surprised if this had come out last year, just based on we know what the animosity was when Jordan Love was drafted and how Aaron Rodgers felt, and they didn't discuss him. But then he goes out and he wins an MVP, and they get literally a goal line play or a field goal kick decision away from possibly going to the Super Bowl for a second possibly for the second straight year. Like, why now in this decision?
I think, you know, by and large, too, I think maybe what we're not talking about now enough is I think he's just done with Green Bay. I think that he's lived in the town for 16 years now, and he's seen a lot of players come, a lot of players go. I think that, you know, obviously he's engaged. Obviously he's pursuing Jeopardy and wants to host that. He has interests, I think, you know, outside of the game. I would take those seriously if I was Green Bay. I mean, he can realistically use that whole Jeopardy thing as leverage because he's such an iconoclast. Like, you don't really know what's going on in his head. I think that all of these interests, all these different things he's into, he seems like somebody who's just kind of tired of Green Bay. And when I asked about his relationship with the head coach, which by all accounts seems really good, right? Publicly, it seems like LaFleur and Rodgers get along. I had one source tell me, well, I'm not so sure about that. He seemed to think nobody really likes anybody there, which tells me, like, I don't even think Matt LaFleur can play, you know, peacemaker here. Or I'm not sure what that route is to him being the quarterback. He can't get past that Love pick. Obviously, that was kind of the number one reason here that he wants to get out.
In your opinion, Ty, how much did Brett Favre's relationship with Rodgers and the way he oversaw that transition influence the way Rodgers now goes about his business?
You know what? Where I think it really influences Aaron Rodgers is how he kind of reads the court of public opinion, right? I mean, when Brett Favre – now, granted, Brett Favre wanted to come back. Like, he wanted to come back to Green Bay. And then they move on. He goes to Minnesota. The fans can't stand him. I think that matters a lot to Aaron Rodgers. I'm sure he doesn't like the backlash he's gotten these past three, 4 days. But I also think he saw with Brett Favre that time healed. Like, eventually Brett Favre was able to return to Lambeau Field as this conquering hero. You know, his number was retired. He's immortalized. Aaron Rodgers will get that day. Like, whatever happens here, that day will come. So I think by and large, he's going to be okay with whatever backlash he gets right now. And from what I can gauge, it's a lot. Like, there are a lot of fans that are like, all right, man, get the hell out of here if you don't want to be here. I think that while he, as much as he cares about the narrative, that he'll be okay with any backlash, and he'd love to just go to a Denver. And it's not for to get this guy's, like, he could go to Denver theoretically, and he could bring a Davante Adams, a Robert Tonyan with him. I mean, they're going to be free agents. So he might be pulling a little LeBron James here and kind of setting things up for all we know.
You look at the teams that reported that Aaron Rodgers wanted to go to, of course, at San Fran. Well, that's not going to happen. But you've got Denver and maybe Vegas. They all seem like a short flight to Los Angeles to maybe host a talk a Jeopardy show as well as play football, if you want to read the tea leaves there. But if you look at either Vegas or Denver, is there any other team or those two teams where it makes sense that a deal can be made?
Those are definitely the teams. For the reasons you just perfectly laid out, I think those interests outside of the game and being able to hop on a flight and get out there, that would be appealing. You know, to use the LeBron comparison again. I mean, I'm sure he loves being in L.A. So Justin Herbert's with the Chargers, and the Rams, they have Matt Stafford, and the Niners did what they did. So, you know, your options are somewhat limited. I can absolutely see Denver. Vegas would be fascinating because – you know, I'd want a Hard Knocks in Vegas if he was there. And it can't be the watered-down Hard Knocks that we got there last time. We need a real Hard Knocks because how long could Aaron Rodgers last with John Gruden? I'd give it 2 or 3 months. I mean, this coach has a notoriously, suffocating grip hold of the quarterback position. You know, it's about 30 words to spit out a play. You know, you're not just freelancing out there in a John Gruden offense. It'd be fun. It'd be fun entertainment for all of us. I think Denver has the young players that they could, like, throw at Green Bay in a trade. I mean, granted, Green Bay, they don't want to trade them right now. They've been very public with that. If they do get to that point, and I think they'll have to get to that point, you're talking Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, I don't know, one of the quarterbacks, maybe a defensive player. I think Denver will be okay just kind of throwing anything that Green Bay wants because they know when you bring in Aaron Rodgers, you're going to be able to recruit some vets. You're going to be able to sign guys on the cheap, and you'll be okay.
Ty Dunn of GoLongTD.com, one of the NFL's best feature writers. He joins us this morning on Rintoul and Sermon. The top five quarterbacks, I don't care who you cheer for, they all landed in super intriguing spots. I don't know if the intrigue meter could be higher because of where they all landed. Which of those landed in the best situation to you?
I would say that's a really good question. I like how you worded that. Obviously the easy answer is Trey Lance, right? Because of Shanahan and the talent on both sides of the ball there. But I still come back to Zach Wilson. I know he played at BYU. It's not exactly in the SEC facing this kind of talent, but I mean, he's got a special game. I mean, it's a game that translates to the NFL, that just that improvisation and that creativity and that ability to think outside the box and play outside the box within the X's and O's. That's Mahomes-like. I mean, he isn't Patrick Mahomes, but I think that's what you're looking for in a quarterback. And I think what Joe Douglas has done is considering the New York Jets, a cursed franchise, it's been pretty remarkable. I mean, they bring in some weapons, Corey Davis, Keelan Cole on defense, Sheldon Rankins, their draft top to bottom. There's a lot to love. I know we always take the bait on the Jets, but I'm taking a hook, line, and sinker right now. I think that the Jets, this is kind of a bridge year. I think that they'll probably hover around .500, but that the year after that, once Wilson really gets accustomed to the NFL game, you're going to see a big jump.
Okay, so we talked about his game on the field, but does Zach Wilson going from BYU and living, you know, a stone's throw from home so he can have home-cooked meals for the season, can that translate to, you know, Concrete Jungle and that fan base? I've seen a game in that stadium, and I've seen the fans turn on their jets pretty quickly. Like, can the fans give him the time to see this out?
It's a great question because, yeah, that's what we don't know. I mean, it's a different world out there, you know. And I'd say this, you know, in talking to his quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, Aaron Roderick, and he made a really good point. He said, look, it's not New York. I get it. It's not, you know, the tabloids and the pressure and all of that and the history. But playing quarterback at BYU, it locally, it does come with a lot of pressure. I mean, you're talking about lineage back to, what, Jim McMahon, Steve Young. I mean, decades and Ty Detmer. Taysom Hill was booed in BYU. He wasn't beloved at BYU. He was booed. I mean, if you don't perform, the locals are in Provo. They're going to let you know. I know it's silly to compare the two. I mean, nothing compares to New York. But I think he is accustomed to it. I think he is at least groomed for it to an extent because of the tradition of playing quarterback at BYU, because he lost. I mean, he didn't lose his job. I mean, he got hurt, but he had to earn his job back before he had that unbelievable 2020 season. Kind of going through a little adversity, kind of being with those fans. It at least is going to be a mini little appetizer to what he'll get in New York. And obviously he passed it with flying colors. I mean, he was unbelievable in college.
Who would be celebrated more by its respective city, by his respective city, were he to turn into a legit top-tier franchise quarterback? Zach Wilson or Justin Fields?
Boy, I'll still go Wilson. I know, I mean, I like Justin Fields a lot. I don't understand how he even slipped to where he slipped. But I kind of like the coaching in New York a little bit more than Chicago. I mean, Mike LaFleur coming from that Shanahan and his brother Matt LaFleur. I mean, I think he's been around some innovative playbooks. And like I said, they have some weapons there. And, I mean, who knows what Allen Robinson's going to do in Chicago. The last time I talked to him, man, he basically said if he gets tagged, he's going to try to get out of there, you know. I don't know. I mean, Chicago wasn't able to do anything with the last quarterback they drafted. I mean, we'll see if Trubisky ends up being anything, but I don't think they handled him well at all. Like, to bench him a game in the last season. And, I mean, Matt Nagy, I know I'm not so sure he's this quarterback guru, is what I'm saying. Like, we'll see what they do with Justin Fields. The verdict's out. I think with the Jets, at least, it looks like there's the right pieces around him. I'd take that over what Fields has around him.
I want to ask you about a situation in another part of New York State, and that's with the Buffalo Bills. And I want to bring this into an NHL type of conversation. The Columbus Blue Jackets need a perception makeover. Like, it's a place people say, I'm not sure stars want to play there. And if that's the case, are you ever going to get to where you want to go to? They had a market makeover in Buffalo. You're very close to that situation. What does that roadmap look like from, I'm sorry, you're not an it franchise, to, actually, that's a place people want to be and we think we can win there?
Josh Allen. You know, it's the quarterback. I mean, because if you don't have the quarterback, I don't, nothing else really matters, right? We're talking about Aaron Rodgers maybe going to a team like Denver and being able to recruit guy. Like, Josh Allen, the moment he looked like he was the real deal, players wanted to play for Buffalo. You know, they became a destination. They didn't have to reach like they have in the past and pay Mario Williams $100 million. And, gosh, even before that, Derek Dockery and Langston Walker got all this money. Like, they always have to overspend for guys in free agency. Now, they're able to kind of dictate the terms because – it all starts with that position. If you've got a young quarterback with potential, let alone one who is in the MVP conversation like Josh Allen, I feel like that's all the identity kind of makeover you need in football anyways, because forever they didn't have any quarterbacks, and they're just taking these huge, huge swings constantly. I mean, Rex Ryan and all the crazy personalities they brought in, they're in a place where they don't have to risk take as much as they did in the past. And as simple as it sounds, I really believe that. If you've got a quarterback, man, it just makes everything else that much easier.
Well, there's a bunch of teams in the NFL draft that just think they got their guy, and we'll see how many of them pan out. Ty, awesome stuff as always. One more plug for the site, golongtd.com. It's fantastic writing. Keep up the great work, and we really appreciate you sharing some time with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That is Ty Dunn of golongtd.com. I wanted to see if he would go into more of the hiring of the manager, the head coach, not just drafting the quarterback. Look, we all need we know Columbus needs a star. They need a star. They've had other elements of the organization in place. I think Kekalainen is a good GM. I think we agree on that. John Tortorella is a good head coach, but it's just run out of steam, and they just need some sort of change. You said yesterday, hey, Pierre-Luc Dubois, was that the train that was missed here? And is there another one coming for the Columbus Blue Jackets? And if there's not, what do they do? Do they just keep spinning their wheels?
Well, here's the thing. It's funny. Remember when Josh Allen was drafted to go to Buffalo, Scott? What were the, like, basically the, well, he didn't play against any really good competition. You know, why was he drafted so high, or why did he go in the first round? And, you know, can he be an NFL quarterback? It took Josh Allen 3 years, 4 years to, is he in his fourth year now? I think he's in his fourth year now. Either way, it's taken him a few years to figure out how to be an NFL quarterback. And because it's Buffalo, he was given the time to become that quarterback, Scott. The fan base, you know, it's the potential's there. It's there. We can wait for it. And we saw progression season after season. But the one thing that they have with Josh Allen is when he got there, he stuck his foot down and he said, you know what? I'm going to be Buffalo. This is where my future is, and I'm going to be here. And that's what Columbus has a hard time figuring out. Like, the guys that they draft don't stick their foot in the sand and say, I want to be here. And I thought maybe that they had with Pierre-Luc Dubois. He seems like a really good dude. You can build around him. You can probably market him, all this kind of stuff. But again, something happened where he says, I don't want to be here. So that's the difference in the situation. So the one thing I want to talk about, what Ty was talking about, the situation in Chicago. Scott, I know we have to get to break here, but I was listening to somebody. It was somebody on the NFL Network on Saturday's draft coverage. And they said, Matt Nagy's a product of Andy Reid's system, right? Like, he was there as the OC, went over to Chicago, and he said they run the same offense. They do. I've never seen more exciting offense in Kansas City and a more boring offense in terms of Chicago. Now, whether that's because Matt Nagy couldn't make it work for Mitch Trubisky, he didn't have the right guy. I'm a little concerned, though, for Justin Fields, because if that's the expectation, is that he's going to now make this offense exciting and somehow be Pat Mahomes, I'd be a little bit worried when it comes to Chicago.
Well, they got a top-tier wide receiver in Allen Robinson, but it sure helps if you got a Travis Kelce or a Tyreek Hill on your roster as well to make that offense look good. And then you throw Patrick Mahomes on top of all of that. One guy can make the difference. One guy can change the perception of a franchise in the National Hockey League, and I will prove it to you next when we make our cases. It comes your way. We get your comments in as well, and Bruce Boudreau in the third hour of the show. It's all coming up on Rintoul and Sermon.